I fly a starship across the universe divide. And when I reach the other side, I'll find a place to rest my spirit if I can. Perhaps I may become a highwayman again.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Wednesday morning. Once again, right to Alabama State House. Big thanks to Scott Stadagan, the House Majority Leader, for letting us do this show in his palatial leader's suite here, surrounded by bowls of candy and old photographs. But we're grateful for that. We do this every Wednesday. We're up here in Montgomery. So it'll come. State Representative Mark Gidley in about a half hour. State Senator Larry Stutz, a friend from Shoals, and my friend Dave Mowry will close out the 11 o'clock hour with him on from time to time. Typically, when Dave's on, we talk about sports, but maybe we'll keep it in the political realm. But joining us now, first time on the program, I should have had him on a long time ago. I've been in the legislature for a couple of years now. He hails from the Wiregrass, had what I would call an upset victory. Not many people saw this coming back in 2022. It was kind of a funny story. Republicans lost the Charlotte Meadows seat with Philip Ensler. Wins that seat, but to kind of balance that out, our next guest, State Representative Rick Ream, wins his race against the incumbent Democrat. Representative, good morning. How are you?
Very good. Thank you for having me on today.
Hey, thanks for coming by. So, let's talk about that. 2 years in here, or a year and a half so, 2.5 years in here, we're in the third year of a quadrennium. How's it going?
I feel it's been going very well. It's been quite a learning process. First time I've ever held a public office, first time I ran for office. But we have a lot of good mentors. Our folks down in the Wiregrass have been very supportive, and it's been a really good experience.
And what led you to run? I mean, running against an incumbent and just kind of that political cycle. Now, look, it was thought it was going to be a bigger Republican night, I think, than what a lot of people thought it would be. You beat the incumbent Dexter Grimsley, not necessarily a raving lunatic leftist Democrat at all, but, watching that cycle, and we were talking about pickups in the state, and just like this town, all the state seats they thought they were going to pick up were like Prattville or whatever, sure. And it turned out not to be true. But you got the seat with little attention or fanfare leading up to your race. It kind of talk about that process, why you ran, and were you surprised? I mean, like, by the outcome?
Actually, I wasn't surprised that we won. We won with 54% of the vote.
With 1,000 votes in the state house race is, right. You know, significant.
Yep. So the one thing about my opponent was that he did have a record, and it was very in tune with the Democrat caucus. He failed to protect our girls in the bathrooms,
right.
Failed to protect our girls in the sports, failed to protect our Second Amendment rights, voted for tax hikes. So everything I did was the comparative of my philosophy and show his record. So that was very impactful.
Yeah, well, and like I said, you're surprised with no help from establishment Republicans.
That's true. I can give you some numbers that, you know, financially, I think cash wise, I think we raised about $30,000 versus $130,000 on the campaign.
That's the challenge, right? You're taking on, when you take on an incumbent Democrat or Republican, you're taking on effectively the entire Montgomery establishment because,
yes.
You know, that's the way the game is played.
And again, I was naive, too. I mean, I worked for Fort Rucker for you know, 25 years and had been retired. John Wall approached me running for that seat, and I looked at the record of the incumbent, and I was like, yeah, we need to do that. Those aren't Wiregrass values. And so that's what motivated me to run for the seat. And a lot of folks didn't know me, but they knew what I was telling, you know, what I was explaining, whether in mailers, door to door, a lot of work. And I had a lot of help with not a lot of people, but the few who helped me helped immensely, worked hard.
Well, like I said, it was a surprise.
Sure.
You know, because there's always... you look at these seats, and they're Democrat seats, and you're like, yeah, there's always an opponent. I didn't know your district that well, District 85, and a pleasant surprise, I would say, and probably should have been more on a lot of our radars. We'll talk about this. You are talking to off air. Why are you Republican?
Well, as you can tell from my accent, I wasn't born in the state of Alabama. I was born in Chicago. It was the Army that brought me down to Fort Rucker for the first time in 1990. Fell in love with Alabama. Every day I wake up, want to make sure that Alabama doesn't become Illinois, New York, and California. But back in the age of 16 was the day I became a Republican. I would go to school, and then at the end of the day, hang out at the local park. The local park district manager said, hey, you're 16. We'd like to hire you to be a rec leader. And I said, well, what does that do? And, you know, he explained it. And I said, all you got to do is go down to your local alderman's office and get a letter of recommendation. So I drove my $400 car down and asked for a letter of recommendation. This guy brings me into a room, opens up a book of everybody who ever lived. I mean, this is a huge book. He flips over. He says, what are your parents' names? And I tell him, and as he's going down that list on that page, he comes to two red highlighted lines, stops, stares at me, goes back to that book, slams it shut and says, you can't come in here looking for a letter of recommendation if your parents are voting Republican. Well, that really shocked me and told me everything I need to know about the system that has now grown into Chicago, Baltimore, Philadelphia, New York.
Old machine politics, yeah.
And so I had one foot in the door, one foot out. I was 16 years old, was blindsided by all this because I was always doing the right thing and the park manager wanted to hire me. So I turned around, pointed my finger at him, and I says, hey, I got everybody's attention. I says, I may not be able to vote for two more years, but I promise you I will never vote for you guys. And I've kept that promise, but not so petty over a job. 2 years later, Mayor Jane Byrne banned the sale and possession of handguns in the city of Chicago, and we all know how that turned out. But I was like, what do they want us to do, live like a school of fish and, you know, just hopefully we're not the ones get bitten by the shark? But that's my Chicago story, but that's a long time ago.
It's worked out so well, banning handguns there. Well, safest city, you know, whatever. I walk down the streets of Chicago, I feel absolutely fine.
Oh yeah, well, I try to avoid that. So I love where I live. Dothan has been the greatest place I've lived. I, you know, spent time in the Army, worked in other states, but this state is worth fighting for and making sure we keep it the way it is. We always have room to improve, but we don't need to go the way some of these other states have.
So you're totally into this without the, like, because I grew up in Alabama and I've been following this stuff for 20, 30 years. Mm-hmm. Lived through, you know, Democrat control of the state. It was alive even during, you know, that the end of the George Wallace era in Alabama in the 80s, and then the first Republican with Guy Hunt. But, like, you're new to this somewhat. What's your impression of sort of this town and this process?
Well, as soon as we're done on Thursday, I like to head back home.
Fair enough, yeah. Truth be told, there's a reason I'm only up here one day a week.
But, I really don't. You know, again, I haven't run for re-election. I am going to run for re-election, and that's mostly because of the feedback and everybody in my district. You know, a lot of people that know me, they know me now because I'm out always. I go to every event I can. Every day I'm busy working somewhere. And so, again, I'm probably going to learn more about that question coming into a re-election cycle. I think I've just been really concentrating on what my constituents want.
The tendency is to get desensitized to a lot of what we see here. And the other thing, especially my listeners would look at this and they think of like Montgomery as a mini Washington, D.C. It's not at all. Mm-hmm. It's totally, totally different. I mean, I lived up there in D.C. for 8 years. It's a totally different mindset, a totally different approach. But sometimes, you know, just kind of the issues that you're considering and deliberating on a day-to-day basis, you don't have the Fox Newsification or whatever going on here. And that's right. Like what the layman who would just start watching this would expect, and it's not that at all.
No, and one of the things is, too, I work well with everybody, I believe, and that's always my intent. You know, I have a district that's over 40% African-American. when I was elected, my philosophy is I represent everybody. And so most anything I'm putting into the House floor is generally constituent-based. You know, I don't wake up every day and says, what new idea, you know, can we come up with? We already have enough laws and rules to probably arrest all of us at any given time. But I want to make things better, and I want to make them better for my constituents. So that's why I'm very conservative, especially fiscally. I don't like taxes, but at the end of the day, there's a lot of things that will be constituent-driven, and you'll see me from some very, very conservative viewpoints, and then others, you know, I'm advocating for Juneteenth to be a state holiday. So, yeah. You know, so it's I every day when I'm making a vote, I'm thinking, what is the consensus back home? That's not always easy to do because, you know, we're always, you know, even you get two people in a room, the chances are they're going to disagree on something. But that's my goal.
Yeah. Well, so your district is Dothan, that north, what, eastern kind of quadrant of Dothan?
It's all of Henry County.
And all
so
of
I'm
Henry
the sole
County.
Representative for Henry County. And then I share Dothan. I actually, my footprint is 2/3 of the city of Dothan. Kinsey area. And so, but I share that with three other representatives, and they're very good. We have I think a terrific, strong Wiregrass delegation. We always work together to protect the Wiregrass as best we can. And, but I actually live in Dothan, but, when the speaker calls me up to the floor, he's a gentleman from Henry County, and I don't correct that because I'm all they have, and I want to make sure they know I represent Henry County.
Well, that's an important county, and just sure. Yellow fella, you know, yes, Abbeville, sir. and that's just you get to be, you know, influential member of the legislature, being from there. But you're right. I mean, I guess historically it's been a Democrat kind of leading district, and it's one of the few swing districts we have in this state.
Right. And you did mention Yellowwood, and I will tell you, I was not as aware of how impactful that is to the district. I knew they employed so many people, but they do a lot of good, too. When we had a church burned down in Abbeville, you know, they were first at the door to see what they can do to help. So that's been a great I guess learning experience to see how business can really work with the community too. That was something I didn't see coming. But
well, I mean, good. You know, Abbeville with Jimmy Rain is really trying to transform that town too. You know, if you drive around there, that's not small potatoes having that district there and being the guy in Montgomery for a lot of that.
Yeah, well, I represent everybody individually, but again, that's a very impactful business to Henry County. We're trying to bring in more economic development in Henry County. Every day I wake up, that's one of the top three. You know, if everything's a priority, nothing is, but economic development is in the top three of my priorities.
Talk to us about Juneteenth, your holiday, Bill, and what you try to do there. Now, I guess right now you have the option of celebrating Robert E. Lee's birthday or Juneteenth.
Well, actually, it was, so that was a compromise. You know, my initial intention was to make it a straight holiday. The bill now as stands actually just makes it a straight holiday, a standalone holiday. Initially, the compromise from last year was they could choose between, the employees, state employees could choose between Juneteenth or Jefferson Davis, the first of June. But that was a compromise again. Remember, this is constituent driven. When it was brought to me, you got to understand the city of Dothan already celebrates as a holiday. The county, Houston County does. And then, of course, it's a federal holiday that was passed by all of our most all the conservative delegation to Washington voted for that. And so it's gotten to be the point where I said, it doesn't make sense that it's not a holiday for the state. And in particular, the governor's declared a holiday last 4 years in a row. So it kind of takes the sting off of, well, we can't afford it, or, you know, they get too many days
off.
So
you're just going to codify it and make it a law.
Yes, I think we need to do that so the governor doesn't have to do our job for us pass it and make a state holiday.
How's the what's the reception to that, you think, in this building?
It's been very good. Of course, you have a lot of members that just do not want to add another state holiday to the state employees. On the other side of that, you know, most employees, the majority of our employees are salaried. We talk about health, mental health all the time, and you know, who's getting these holidays? DHR people, ALEA, you know, law enforcement, Department of Corrections. I think adding that one holiday that they've already been enjoying the last 4 years anyway, and they will enjoy it again if we don't pass it. So I think it's time to, you know, make sure that there's no more divisiveness on it, and then make it a holiday.
It's you know, for years and years it was a hot button, and now kind of coming back around, and
I have the votes, so I think the only controversy is why is a white Republican carrying this bill?
Well, you're voting your doing your district
exactly,
right?
I've been through two committee meetings. I had constituents come up from the last one at fiscal responsibility, and they spoke and you know, we're saying, hey, you know, Rick wasn't the one that wanted to carry the bill, but we insisted he carry the bill, and I'm going to do what my constituents advocate for, you know, if it's, you know, a good idea.
Yeah, right.
So, but I know the history behind it too. You know, this holiday started really celebrated 1872 in Houston. They purchased a 5-acre park, called it Emancipation Park. So that's 1872, not 1972. The holiday and that celebration has spread, and you got to think 330 years. That West African slave trade took, you know, was in place, going to Brazil, Dominican Republic, the colonies, 330 years. That's more than we've been a country. That's more than Rome held Britain, the island. And so I think it's so significant that it's appropriate that we honor the end of that slave trade.
Representative, we're going to leave it there, but do appreciate you coming by. Let's do this again soon.
Yeah. Thank you so much. It's an honor being on.
State Representative Rick Ream, very kind to this program, coming on. We got to get a break here. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Once was a thought inside my head.